Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Montreal, Quebec, Canada, and earned a BA from Yale and an MA from the University of Toronto. He's developed multiple projects in Detroit, including Orchestra Place and the Ellington Apartments, and he played a critical role in bringing Whole Foods to the new center area in 2013. The chairman emeritus of the Detroit Symphony Orchestra, he's recently bought the Fisher Building and the Albert Kahn Building. His name, Peter Cummings, and we're honored to have him as our guest. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and with Peter Cummings, the legendary Detroit developer and philanthropist. Peter, welcome. A real honor to have you.
It's a pleasure to be here, Jack.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad, please?
Well, I grew up in Montreal, as you said, and I grew up in a community that, in many ways, had its diversity or its separation among ethnic groups that is not dissimilar from Detroit in many ways. And I grew up in a Montreal where the French Canadians were the majority, and they are the majority, and I'm an Anglo, and I was in the minority. And I think, you know, the English-speaking population in Montreal, maybe 20%, that's their mother tongue, and there were two public school systems in Montreal when I grew up, the Protestant School Board of Greater Montreal, where the English-speaking kids went, and the Catholic School Board of Greater Montreal, where the French kids went. And there were really significant struggles between the French and the English while I was growing up. And I had left for college when it really started to heat up. But by 1970, there was something called the Crise d'Octobre, where the FLQ, which was a French-Canadian terrorist group, kidnapped and murdered the provincial labor minister and kidnapped and turned loose after 90 days the British Trade Council. Shortly after that, in the early 70s, I was back in Montreal after I got my degrees and was working for the Montreal Star as a journalist. So, you know, I sort of covered a lot of this activity, and that's the sort of the larger social milieu. And as far as my mother and father go, my mother was an American, my father was Canadian born, and we grew up in a fairly cloistered kind of English-speaking community where there was like a lot of Scottish Protestant influence, and there was a pretty significant Jewish community, which I was a member of. But I had a kind of uneventful childhood, and I left home when I was 16 to start my undergraduate work at Yale. And from then, you know, I was a journalist, really, for the better part of 5 or 6 years. Then I moved to Florida, still in my 20s, and got into the real estate business.
How was it you got into the real estate game?
Well, I'm the third generation in my family that's in the real estate business. We don't have a company that's been passed from my grandfather to my father to me and to my son, who's also in the real estate business. But I had an opportunity to move to Florida and get involved with a luxury apartment project in Palm Beach that was being converted to condominiums. That was my first real estate venture about 40 years ago.
And that's where you first met the late, great Max Fisher.
Exactly. He was a resident of this project, and The marketing strategy when we were converting from rental to condominium was that there were three or four owners of residences within the project. There were 240 apartments, about nine more than will be in Third and Grand, which I can see under construction out of the studio window. And the marketing strategy was there were three or four really influential people who lived in this project, and if we could convert them, it would actually say to a broader band of residents that these smart guys have done their due diligence and have endorsed this project. And at the top of that list was a man named Max Fisher. And no one else wanted the assignment of trying to sell the late, great, and sometimes intimidating Max Fisher, his apartment. So I got the assignment, and I failed. He was fairly brusque in our meeting, said I was wasting his time and he was wasting mine. He would never buy the apartment. And in fact, 6 weeks later, he and his wife bought a home on the Intracoastal Waterway, which they retained until my late mother-in-law passed away a year ago. So that was my first foray into the real estate business.
Later, you married one of his daughters.
I did.
Tell us about Max Fisher.
So what happened was two or three months after my failed effort to sell him an apartment, I was in the lobby of the King David Hotel in Jerusalem, and I ran into Max Fisher, his wife Marjorie, and their youngest daughter, Marjorie. And as brusque as he was in a kind of business setting, when he saw me in Israel, that for him checked a good box for Peter Cummings to see him in Israel. And so I spent a good deal of time with the Fishers over the next week. And again, by chance, as these things frequently happen, a month after that, I was in Los Angeles helping my brother celebrate his 21st birthday. And my son from my first marriage, who was then six or seven, I had custody of him, but his mother had 6 weeks with him during the summer. So he was in Montreal with his mother, and I had promised him I would come. This is the summer of 76 when the Summer Olympics were in Montreal, and I had promised him that I would come and take him to some events. And on a whim, really, I decided that instead of flying Los Angeles to Montreal, I would fly Los Angeles to Detroit to Montreal and spend the night with the Fishers, which I did, and that's how I met Julie, who on January 2nd will have been my wife for 40 years.
When we come back, we'll ask Peter, what was the biggest thing that he learned from Max Fisher? And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula, and we're with Peter Cummings, who a year ago with a couple of partners bought the Fisher Building.
Yes.
Peter, what's the biggest thing you learned from Max Fisher?
You know, I learned so many things from Max, and there's not a day that goes by when I don't hear one of the things he said echo in my head, depending on what the circumstances are. And the thing that I, you know, remember most about Max is how he sailed with such an even keel. He never got enormously enthused about something, or never showed that, and never got enormously down about anything. And I remember asking him one day if he ever got angry. And he said, sure, I get angry. And I said, do you ever show your anger? And he said, never when I'm angry. And to me, that's such a profound statement about how he lived his life. I mean, he had the normal emotions that anyone has. But in his dealings with people, he knew how to manage those emotions and not let them interfere with how he dealt with people. he was remarkable in that way. I learned a lot from him, and that's more of a personal and emotional sort of lesson from Max, but I learned a lot from him in how he looked at business, in how he made his investments, how he assessed risk, the kinds of things that he was willing to get involved with and the kinds of things he wasn't. He was very much a guy who bet on the jockey. He maintained a close relationship whenever he had a major investment, a major position in Comerica or a major position in Sotheby's or whatever. He always fashioned a relationship with the CEO so he could just call and have a chat with whoever the CEO was and get a good perspective on what was going on in the business. He worked the phones very, very well.
For a number of years, you focused your development efforts in Florida. Then you bought into Detroit. And you were one of the first people to really put your money downtown in development. And in 2013, you were instrumental in getting us Whole Foods to move to Mack Avenue.
Right.
Talk about the opening day of Whole Foods in 2013.
The Whole Foods experience was interesting for me because I remember standing in the parking lot the day that the store opened, and it was like a revival meeting. It was extraordinary. There probably were 600 or 700 people. All the news outlets were there. The president of Whole Foods, Senator Stabenow, came in from Washington. The mayor. Rich and poor, young and old, black and white. And I remember saying to myself, it's been a long time since I've done a real estate development that I felt this good about. And my perception of Detroit shifted at that moment. Instead of seeing Detroit perhaps as blighted and distressed, I started to think of it as grossly underserved. And I think that shift in perception was a major factor in my decision to come back to Detroit a year or two later and really get all in terms of what was going on in the city and real estate development.
Speaking of getting all in 2016, you and a few partners created The Platform.
Right.
Tell us about The Platform.
Well, The Platform is a real estate development company that is dedicated to the rebuilding of Detroit. And my perception, when I started to think subsequent to the Whole Foods experience about what the opportunity might be in Detroit, it was clear to me that Danny Gilbert had done a huge service for this city by almost single-handedly rebuilding the central business district and taking these hulking buildings that were empty and rehabbing them and bringing probably now it's 15,000 employees downtown. And I realized also that the Illich family in the sports and entertainment district had was doing a lot of work and had a lot of property under control. So The conclusion I came to was that the opportunity was north of that. Midtown, Tech Town, News Center, really the neighborhoods that were going to now be linked to the Sports and Entertainment District and the Central Business District by the recently opened Q Line. So in forming The Platform, my partner Dietrich Knorr and I establish that as our first mission, is to develop high-quality mixed-use projects within a block or two of the of Q Line stops in the Midtown, Tech Town, New Center area. And we've started. We have two projects now under construction and another couple of projects in the pipeline. So that's our first mission. And Dietrich and I came together really as a result of our being the champions of the acquisition of the Fisher & Kahn assets.
We're talking to Peter Cummings, who has a smile that speaks 1,000 words. speaking of these four developments, as we look out the window of the Golden Tower of the Fisher Building just west at West Grand Boulevard and 3rd, we've got a 231-unit apartment development going up. Talk about that effort.
Well, that's my first ground-up apartment project in Detroit. I've been involved with apartment projects in Detroit, particularly worked for Max Fisher and Al Taubman as the asset manager for Riverfront from 1992 until 2005, and then bought the property in 2005 and converted one of the towers to condominium, and then sold the other two towers in 2007. But the 3rd and Grand project, the 231 units we're building at the corner of 3rd and Grand in the New Center area, is something that it's a project that we're very proud of, and we think it's going to be very well received in this area. It's been a long time since new housing of this nature and quality was brought to New Center, and our chief development officer, who's a guy named Mike Hammond, is supervising this, and he worked for me in Florida for 15 years, and before that worked for the Related Group in Miami. And in his career, he's probably built 15,000 apartments. So he's a highly skilled professional. And we think that once this project is finished, the community will see the results of our combined efforts.
That particular site at West Grand and 3rd has special significance for you in that 53 years ago, your late great father-in-law, Max Fisher, broke ground on a hotel at that site.
Well, you know, I have a picture of him at the groundbreaking in September of 1964 of the Howard Johnson's Motor Lodge. And I don't know that he was ever actually a principal in that deal. I know in the caption of the picture, he is identified as the chairman of the New Center Council. So he was active in this community, and he was at that groundbreaking, and it's just another one of these ideas coming full circle in my life and my connection with Max, that 53 years later I would be breaking ground on the same site. The Motor Lodge, the Howard Johnson's, was imploded in 1997, and it took us a long time when we started to dig that hole to get rid of the remains of the Motor Lodge.
We're talking to Peter Cummings, and we hear all of this great news about the rebirth, the phenomenal rebirth of downtown, midtown, New Center, but a lot of people are concerned that there's no rebirth in the neighborhoods. When we come back, we're going to talk to them about that. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasula, and we're with Peter Cummings with The Platform. Peter, I quote you now. We think unless the recovery embraces a broader group of the population, then you're going to find in the Woodward Quarter that it will be a sort of a Pyrrhic victory, and eventually we will pay the price for that. So you're a very big believer in rebirth of neighborhoods, and The Platform is focusing on three neighborhoods. First, let's talk about the Livernois and 6 Mile neighborhood.
The Livernois and 6 Mile neighborhood is a neighborhood with enormous promise. And I think our planning director, our very talented planning director, Maurice Cox, identified that and made it the neighborhood he wanted the city to embrace first. And Kresge Foundation backed it, and I think a few other foundations helped, but Kresge has taken the lead. And the signature project that that Maurice came forward with was the rebirth of the Fitzgerald neighborhood. And the Fitzgerald neighborhood fronts on 6 Mile or McNichols and goes south to Puritan and is bounded on the east by the University of Detroit and on the west by Mary Grove College. And we partnered, the platform partnered with Century Partners, David Alade and Andrew Colomb, two really talented young men who have already built a track record in rehabbing single-family homes. We partnered with them and responded to a request for proposals from the city, and were selected. And so we're really on the brink of starting work in the Fitzgerald neighborhood, which will involve a takedown of somewhere between 300 and 400 lots from the land bank, which is by far the largest takedown that will have occurred from the land bank. And we have plans to rehab 115 homes, demolish about 15 homes, and take the balance of the lots and create either active recreation, passive recreation, or productive land use, urban farming on those lots. So this could be a blueprint, which if it succeeds and is shown to be sustainable, could be picked up and moved to a lot of the other neighborhoods. So Livernois and Livernois and Six Mile, I lost my North South Street for a minute. That's an important neighborhood.
If Max was still with us, he would say, Peter, it will succeed. Okay, second neighborhood you're focused on is the Island View neighborhood.
Yeah, Island View is one of the villages, and it's clustered around East Grand Boulevard when it makes that curve towards Jefferson Boulevard and then flows into the Belle Isle Bridge. And that neighborhood is really the neighborhood that my partner Dietrich is championing, because he's a parishioner at the Church of the Messiah at the corner of Lafayette and East Grand. So he's in his own way embedded in that community. And we bought a property after Mike Curis closed the Big Boy there. We bought that property from him. And then we have a hold and maintain agreement with the land bank for four or five properties across the street from that. So that's another neighborhood that we think has a lot of promise and where we want to put resources.
Okay. I buy the first two. I'm all in. Let's talk about the third one, Brightmoor Community. A number of years ago, CBS's 60 Minutes came to town, Bob Simon, and did an expose on Detroit, and it was awful. And at one point, he's in a car with John George, Motor City Blightbusters, and they're driving through Brightmoor. And Peter, Bob Simon says, John, I've been all over the world. The worst area I've ever seen in the world is in Mogadishu. This Brightmoor is the closest thing I've ever seen to Mogadishu. So you, Julie, you're putting your money into Brightmoor. Why? If Max was alive, he would say, Peter, why Brightmoor?
Well, the reason why Brightmoor is really that the Fisher Foundation has been investing in Brightmoor, in social services in Brightmoor, principally. Although they've also been involved in supporting urban gardening there as well. But they've been doing that for 8 or 9 years. And over that period of time, they've established relationships of mutual trust and respect with the leaders of that community and the residents of that community. And we were able, or have been able, to sort of build on that. And what I did was buy five properties at the Wayne County auctions that are clustered around the intersection of Grand River and Lasser. And one of them is a small surface parking lot, and the other four were boarded up buildings. And, you know, I had this belief, and have this belief, that at a certain moment in time, investing in social services is no longer enough, that the residents of that area need to see some enhancement of the built environment in order for them to believe that they're participating in what it, in some way in what is going on downtown. So we have two different development concepts that we're now planning, and we've cleaned up Some of the buildings, we've put new roofs on all the buildings so that they'll be protected from any further deterioration, because we think most of the space is retrievable for redevelopment. And we've also helped John George, who you've mentioned before, fund the re-roofing of his properties, Motor City Java Cafe, the Motor City Blight Busters, the Artist Village. Give us another year or two, and you'll start to see enhancement around that corner of Grand River and Losser.
I lived at Grand River and Cooley, which was one block west of Losser, for about 7 or 8 years. So I know that area.
Yeah.
When we come back, we'll ask Peter about the Fisher Building, the iconic Fisher Building. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Peter Cummings, and he and his partners in 2016 bought the Fisher Building and the Albert Kahn Building. Peter, tell us about the Golden Tower of the Fisher Building.
Well, the Fisher Building is certainly the most iconic building in Detroit and perhaps in the state of Michigan, and certainly one of the architecturally most significant buildings in this country. I was reading a recent issue of, or not issue, but online, Curbed magazine, the national edition, and they made a list, I think, of about 20 architectural must-sees in this country, and number three on the list was the Fisher Building. And the first two entries on the list were museums, one in New York and one in San Francisco. So the Fisher Building has a well-earned reputation as being one of the most significant buildings in this community. And it's actually 2 years ago that I and my partners acquired the Fisher Building and the Kahn Building and about 2,000 parking spaces that came with it in various structures and surface lots. And we had trouble figuring out, well, what's this worth? Because we know it had gone through a period of neglect and that there was a lot of deferred maintenance and capital expenditures that were going to be required. And so ultimately, we came to the decision that if we could buy it for under this package of assets for under $15 million, we'd figure out a way to make it work. And we're well on our way towards doing that. It's I don't want to minimize the challenge. We make continuous progress and have plans that will probably take us another 3 years to fully implement. But what was interesting to me about the Fisher Building was this, that we went through all kinds of analyses in the first year after buying the building, and we looked at converting part of it to a hotel, and we looked at converting part of it to residential, and ultimately we came back 90 years later to endorse the original vision of the Fisher Brothers when they built this building, and they said, we want this to be a great office tower with shopping and entertainment. And we think that is the right use for this building 90 years later. It just needs to have its systems and its retailers and its office population brought into the 21st century.
We've heard all this stuff about the rebirth of Detroit. We see it downtown, midtown. Recently, Robin Terry started an effort to raise $50 million to expand Motown Museum. Henry Ford Hospital, right down West Grand Boulevard, spending $200 million on a new cancer center. Describe, Peter Cummings, the new center area in 2021.
Well, I think the new center area in 2021 is going to be, in essence, another center of gravity for the downtown. If you go to the corner of the intersection, I should say, of Grand Boulevard and Woodward Avenue, you have four neighborhoods that pinwheel around that intersection. To the southeast, you have Milwaukee Junction, where we have three projects, either underway or in planning. Two of them are non-residential, one is residential. And Milwaukee Junction, to me, is the neighborhood in the city that is the most, I'm trying to think of the right word, misunderstood or ignored. And 100 years ago, Milwaukee Junction was the Silicon Valley of the United States. We bought a property on Paquette, really an industrial property of about 100,000 square feet that is adjacent to the Ford Paquette plant, where the Model T first came off the line and where Henry Ford's first office was, and where there's now a museum. And 100 years ago, you know, the automotive industry was born in that neighborhood. And I'm always surprised at how few people know about Milwaukee Junction and know about its history. Then you go to the northeast and you have the North End, where we have three or four people in our company who are buying homes in the North End and rehabbing them. So there's a single family neighborhood in that northeast quadrant. You go to the northwest quadrant, and that's the quadrant we're sitting in. That's the traditional new center neighborhood. And then you go to the southwest quadrant and you get Tech Town and the growing presence of Wayne State in their north campus, and also the location where the Pistons Performance Center will be built, that will bring the headquarters of the Pistons, their practice facility, and a sports medicine institute in partnership with Henry Ford. So you put all that together, and you put the Q line, you add the Q line, you add Third and Grand, you add some of the other things we're doing. And within 3 or 4 years, this neighborhood will be buzzing. And we're all in on that cluster of neighborhoods. We think it's it has the potential to be a real mix of neighborhoods that's, you know, very organic, very urban, very livable.
If Max Fisher was still with us today, what would he say to us?
Well, I think Max would be just thrilled at what he would see happening in Detroit. I think that Max was always a believer in Detroit and very loyal to Detroit. And his office was in this building until he passed. And he believed that although he was a leader in many ways of national and international significance, he believed that you needed to be a leader in your own backyard in order to have impact anywhere else. And I think that he'd be very pleased with the job that Mike Duggan is doing. I think he'd be pleased with the job that the foundation community has played in the rebirth of this city, probably a larger role for foundations than you typically find in other urban centers. I think he'd be proud of the role that the Fisher Foundation is playing in this. And I think he'd be amazed that Donald Trump is the president.
He knew all his presidents. Recently, you and Julie made another major contribution to the DSO. Tell us about that.
Well, I've been a supporter of the DSO since I went on the board in 1992 or 1993, and Barbara Fisher was a board member, and she was given the assignment of soliciting me. And she asked for a gift of $5,000, and I gave her a gift of $2,500. And that was my first gift to the DSO. And now, $9,997,500 later, our cumulative giving has reached $10 million. And to recognize that, the institution renamed what was the Music Box. They renamed it the Cummings Cube, and part of our additional gift was to fund the hiring of a dedicated curator for that space. so that there was someone getting up every morning and wondering how to match with our symphonic offerings in the orchestra hall space, how to match all kinds of other musical and performing arts presentations that could attract other segments of the population to the Max and Marjorie Fisher Music Center.
As our time winds down together tonight, what advice would you give to our young listeners, Peter?
The first thing that I would point out to our young listeners is that they live either in Detroit or in the Detroit metropolitan region, in the center of the great urban lab in this country. That's the way I view Detroit, as a place where anything can happen, a place where, to some degree, we're limited only by our imagination. Because this is a community where I think if you have a good idea and you have a good team to execute it, you can attract the capital and do things which 5 years ago were unthinkable. It's also a community where, as a young person, you can have an impact. If you're in New York or Chicago or Seattle or Boston or Los Angeles, it takes a while for a young person to get into the game. And in Detroit, you can get into the game as soon as you want to. There's so many ways to get engaged in this community. And so my advice to young listeners, none of whom have actually sought my advice, so I say this with that caution, is to get engaged in the city. Don't sit on the sidelines, because if you sit on the sidelines and you see what happens over the next 5 years, you're going to say, I can't believe I didn't get engaged 5 years ago.
Peter Cummings, thank you. Thank Julie. Thank the entire Fisher family for all you're doing for Detroit.
My pleasure. Nice to be with you, Jack.
Please join us next week. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spawn.